Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Andre Vesalius, a Wikipedia reading. Well, there you go. So I've just done Andre V. Vesalius from popular science book designed with a secondary idea of indoctrinating students with the science story, but underneath the science story is Aren't Science Communicators the Coolest People on Earth? They've just got this real syrupy look about them. But having read the Andreas Vesalius, you have so many questions. Sort of, why was this person who was basically necrophiliac, sort of weird as, why did he suddenly, the instant he published Going Dead Die to be a physician to the emperor, you know, what, and why did he suddenly stop? And at what point is this book written in such a way that is sort of the majestic greatness of a book, this sort of pseudo greatness, this self-assured, you know, fig jam, fuck, I'm great, just ask me type of stuff. So I'm going to read the Wikipedia article to you and we'll see how this goes. So it's just a more, you know, I think a more down-to-earth view. So I'm going to read it here. Andre Vesalius, V-E-S-A-L-I-U-S, 1514 to 1564, that's the full year. He's a 16th century Flemish autonomous physician. So there's the Dutch, there's the there's Holland, and the Flemish parts of Holland, which go across, there's two different countries. But you've also got to remember that they were part of the Spanish Empire and the Habsburg Empire, the Holy Roman Empire. It's all complex around this time. And then this is before Holland actually exists, I believe. The author of one of the most influential books on human anatomy, De Humani Corporis Fabrica Libra Septem, on the fabric of the human body, in seven books, it says. It's not there. This is often referred to as the founder of modern human anatomy. He's born in Brussels, which is part of the Habsburg Netherlands. He was a professor of the University of Padua and later became imperial physician to the court and emperor Charles V. Vesalius is a Latinized form of the Dutch Andrew van Wissel. Andres van Wissel. So Vesalius is Latinized. It's common practice among European scholars at this time to Latinize the name. His name is also given as Andrea Vesalis, Andres Vesali, Vesalio, Vesal, Vesali, Vesali. So it's Latinized. Vesalius is born as Andreas van Wissel to his father, Andreas van Wissel, and his mother, Isabel Crabb. Now, I'm sure we've got Annabel Crabb, our reporter, on 1514, which is then part of Habsburg Netherlands. His grandfather, Jan van Wissel, probably born in Wissel, one would hope, received a medical degree at the University of Pavia and taught medicine at the University of Leuven. His grandfather, or his great-grandfather, his grandfather, Edward van Wissel, was a royal physician to the Emperor Maximilian, who is the Spanish one. So it's how the Habsburg sort of got sucked into Spain somehow. While his father, Andreas van Wissel, served as the apothecary to mathematician Maximilian. So they're all in the court, the royal court system. So one's a physician, one's supplying drugs. The latter, valet de chambre to his successor, Charles V. So his grandfather is in there. Andres encouraged his son to continue the family tradition and enrolled him in the Brethren of the common life in Brussels to learn Greek and Latin prior to learning medicine according to the standards of the era. So it's a big effort, a big nepotism in the way. In 1528, Versailles entered the University of Leuven, taking arts, but his father was appointed as valet de chambre in 1532. He decided instead to pursue a career in the military in the University of Paris, where he relocated. So, he's got a new thing. His dad is now as a valet de chambre. And his valet de chambre is... Oh, so he's a much more closer, a valet, a room servant, a box. There he studied the theories of Galen under the auspices of Jacques Dubourg, Jacob Silvius, and Jean Fernel. It was during this time that he developed his interest in anatomy, and he was often found examining excavated bones and the Charles houses and the cemetery of the Innocents. Okay, so this is a direct thing that he in Holland was in anatomy and was getting the judges to do it. So this is a direct contradiction with that book. So it's there he developed interest in anatomy, whereas before he had him going to study anatomy in Paris. He was a military degree, having an arts degree for the royal court. So it's, you know, this is a major contradiction with that book. Versailles was forced to leave Paris in 1536 owing to the open hostilities between the Holy Roman Empire and France, and returned to Louvain. So this is around the time of Descartes as well. You know, he completed his studies under Johann Winter von Alnitch and graduated the following year. His thesis, Paris Inendam Liben Raza Messi Arabis Claris Ad rega al solum del affectum singularum corpus toparium tecaju, was a commentary on the ninth book of Rhasis. He remained at Leuven for a while before leaving after dispute with his professor. After settling briefly in Venice, he moved to the University of Padua to study medicine doctorate he received in 1537. So this is slightly different from this book, that, you know, he was in Paris. I think the big question is then how in this book he did anatomy and was great in Paris. Yeah, it's just enormous. How does this go on? Medical career and accomplishments. On the day of his graduation, he was immediately offered the chair of surgery and anatomy at Padua. He was also guest lectured at University of Bologna and University of Pisa prior to taking up his position in Padua. So this is Pisa, is around the time of Galileo. Versailles travelled through Italy, assisted the future Pope Paul IV and Ignatius Loyola to heal those afflicted with leprosy. For fuck's sake. Oh, sorry. Surely that would be an important thing. So he's a Jesuit. Ignatius Loyola. I just can't... I can't believe this is not in the main book. Isn't that incredibly important? Leprosy is rather good because the bodies are falling apart. They're sort of self-dissecting themselves in front of you. In Venice, he met the illustrator Johann van Kuller, a student of Titian. It was with Van Kuller that Versailles published his first anatomical test, Tabula Annalis 6. Previously, these topics had been taught primarily by reading classical texts, mainly Galen, followed by animal dissections by a barber surgeon. There you go. Rather than a prisoner, animal dissections, and this is just bizarrely different. His work was directed by the lecturer. No attempt was made to confirm Galen's claims, which were considered unassailable. Okay, it's not that they just they said, there's no comment. And which is similar to a teacher teaching, doing a demonstration which disproves what they've just said. Vasselis, in contrast, performed dissections as a primary teaching tool, handling the actual work himself and urging students to perform dissections themselves. He considered hands-on direct observation to be the only reliable source. Well, there you go. So a barber and a horse. Vasselis created a detailed illustration of anatomy for students in the form of 6 large woodcut posters, which he found that some of them were being widely copied. He published them all in 1538 under the tablet under Thomas VI. He followed in 1539 with an updated version of Winter's Anatomical Handbook, So this is vastly different from someone who was in Holland asking prisoners to do things, sleeping with corpses and stuff like that. It's just ridiculous, and fighting dogs. Okay. And there's other books, and he's got a woodcut poster. In 1539, he also published his Venetian letter on bloodletting. This was a popular treatment for most illnesses, but there was some debate about where to take the blood from. The classical Greek procedure advocated by Galen was to collect blood from a site near the location of illness. However, the Muslim and medieval practice was to draw a small amount of blood from a distant location. Vasselis publicly generally supported Galen's view, with a qualification that rejected the infiltration of Galen. So your barber is a professional bloodletter. So he's a professional body cutter. So they would do animals rather than prisoners. And this is all sensationalism. I don't know where this person they got that book from. My problem here is. In 1541, while in Bologna, Vasselis discovered that all of Galen's research had been restricted to animals, since dissection had been banned in ancient Rome. Galen had dissected Barbary marks instead, which he considered structurally closer to man. Even though Galen produced many errors due to the anatomical material available to him, he was a qualified examiner, but his research was weakened by stating his findings philosophically. So his findings were based on religious precepts rather than science. Isn't that interesting? He didn't have science around him. He only had religious philosophical ones. And in essence, I also do that. I tend to write philosophical stuff rather than stating it plain. Vasselis contributed the new Grinter edition to Galen's collected works and began to write his own anatomical text based on his research. Until Phil pointed out Galen's substitution of animals for human anatomy, it had gone unnoticed and had long been the basis of studying human anatomy. However, some people still chose to follow Galen and resented Vasselis for calling attention to the difference. Is that not a much more thing of Galen just makes mistakes? Galen was actually quite good, but he was restricted by 2 things, having to do it on animals, and 2, be circumvent to make a philosophical statement where a scientific statement would now be put. And so he just made a practical point forward. So he wasn't a fighter for science. He was stuck in the ancients, still believing and bleeding, and he only made a small step forward. So this spectacular scientists are the greatest, like me standing before you as a slick person who can make false statements to children. How I am so ropeable about that text. Galen has assumed the arteries carry the purest blood to higher organs such as the brain and lungs from the left ventricle of the heart, while veins carry the lesser organs and such as the stomach and right ventricle. In order for this theory to be correct, some kind of opening was needed to interconnect the ventricles, and Galen claims he had found them. So paramount to Galen's authority for that 140 years, so he had blood flowing out and not flowing back. It's the most amazing. And so arteries to the big organs, secondary organs. Isn't that amazing? He claimed to find these holes. Until Viss admitted he could not find them. Nonetheless, he did not venture to dispute Galen on the distribution of blood, and being unable to offer any other solution, and supposed it diffused through unbroken partition of the ventricles. Isn't that the most amazing story? So that really nails it. Galen said the veins did the stomach, the arteries did the upper thing. It's all going out. How does it all work? It's amazing. Other famous examples of Viss disproving Galen's assertions were his discovery that the lower jaw was composed of only one bone, not of two, which Galen had assumed based on animal dissections. And the human lacks a retmental, a network of blood vessels based on the brain that is found in sheep and other ungulates. Isn't this the most amazing difference? You can see these people, they come in and they are deceiving the children. Isn't that the most amazing thing to read? In 1543, Vesalius conducted a public dissection of a body of Jacob Kerr von Gerber, a notorious felon in the city of Basel in Switzerland. Oh, so it's only one person. He didn't. This execution date's ridiculous. He assembled the articulate bones and finally donating the skeleton to the University of Basel. This preparation, the Basel skeleton, is Vesalius' only well-preserved skeletal preparation and the world's oldest surviving anatomical preparation. It's still displayed at the Anatomical Museum at the Basel, and there it is. Poor chap. Oh, he's chopped up. He's actually got quite thick ribs. He's not such a big person. In the same year, Vesalius took residence in Basel with the help of Jonas Oppitz to publish a 7-volume De Humani Corpus Fabricum on the fabric of human bones. It was groundbreaking work on anatomy and was dedicated to Charles V. Many believe it was illustrated by Titian's pupil Jean-Stéphane Descartes, but evidence is lacking and it's unlikely that a single artist created all 273 illustrations in a period of time so short. About the same time, he published an abridged edition for students, Andrea Vesalius Solum Humani Corpus Fabrica Librorum Epitome, which dedicated to Philip II of Spain, the son of the emperor. That work, now collectively referred to as Fabrica de Vesalius, was groundbreaking in the history of medical publishing and considered a major step in the development of scientific medicine. Because of this, it marks the establishment of anatomy as a modern descriptive science. So anatomy is not an actual science, it's a descriptive science. Although Vesalius' work was not the first such work based on actual dissection, nor even the first work of the era, the production quality, highly detailed intricate plates, and likelihood that the artists who produced it were clearly present in person at the dissections made it an instant classic. Pirated editions were available almost immediately, an event Vesalius acknowledged that the printer's note would happen. Vesalius was 28 years old when his first edition of Fabrica was published. So this is a direct contradiction of everything that's told to the students. It's not good enough to lie in public literature. It's not good enough to lie. In fact, it's punishable to tell falsehoods in scientific literature. To knowingly mislead fellow scientists, either by correspondence, by data, by effort. It's due candor, due care. Yet, we have a different standard for school students. We can lie, we can trash their future. It doesn't matter. They're only kids. And the only crime is that they've got parents who can pay me money. It's just awful. Imperial Physician and Death. I like that. Soon after the publication, Vesalius was invited to become the Imperial Physician of the court of Emperor Charles V. He informed the Venetian Senate that he would leave his post in Padua, which prompted Duke Cosimo I of Medici to invite him to move to the expanding University of Pisa, which he declined. Venice took up the offer of position in the imperial court, where he had to deal with other physicians who mocked him for being a mere barber surgeon instead of an academic working on the research basis of theory. For fuck's sake. In 1540, shortly after entering the service of the Emperor, Visser married Anne van Ham from Villevoort, Belgium. They had one daughter named Anne who died in 1588. Oh, is that? Oh, well. Over the next 11 years, Visser travelled with the court, treating injuries caused by battles or torments, performing postmortems, administering medication, writing private letters, addressing specific medical questions. During the years, he wrote Epistle on the China Route, a short text on the properties of the medical plant, whose efficacy he doubted, as well as the defence of his anatomical findings. This elicited a new round of attacks on his work and called him to be punished by the Emperor. See, isn't it, man? So this... And Charles V commissioned an inquiry in Salamanca to investigate the religious implication of his methods. Although Vercellus' work was cleared by the board, the attacks continued. 4 years later, one of his main detractors, the one-time Professor Joseph Silbus, published an article that claimed the human body itself had changed since Galen had studied it. Right, even though Galen was using animals and transferred animal dissection into stuff like that. After the abdication of Charles V, Visser continued the court in a great favour with his son Philip II, who was awarded him with a pension for life by making him a Count Palatine. In 1555, he published a revised edition of the Humani Corporis Fabricum. In 1564, Vesalius, who went on a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, some said, in penance for being accused of dissecting a living body. He sailed with the Venetian fleet under James Macedon via Cyprus. When he reached Jerusalem, he received a message from the Venetian Senate requesting him again to accept the Paduan professorship, which had become vacant to the death of his friend, pupil Fallopius. Oh! Fallopian tubes! Fallopius. Wow. Fallopius was a pocket. After struggling for many days with adverse winds in the Ionian Sea, he was shipwrecked on the island of Zakynthos. He soon died in such debt that the benefactor kindly paid for his funeral. At the time of his death, he was 49 years of age. He was buried somewhere on the island of Zakynthos. So he's shipwrecked. Oh, isn't that the most spectacular story possible? Oh, wow. For some time, it was assumed the Venetian pilgrimage was due to the pressures imposed for him on the Inquisition. Today, assumptions is generally considered to be without foundation. It is dismissed by modern biographers. It appears the story was spread by Hubert Lungert, a diplomat of the Emperor Charles V, then under the Prince of Orange, who claimed that in 1565 Visser had performed an autopsy on a cat in Spain while the heart was still beating, leading to the Inquisition's condemning him to death. The story went on to claim that Philip II had sentenced commuted to a pilgrimage. The story resurfaced several times until it was most recently revised. So it's complete. It's a complete just gibbledy shit. And you also think that, you know, these trips required doctors, you know, like a ship's voyage doctor. Okay, the publication, the Humani Corporis Fabricum, in 1543, Vesalius asked Jonas Oporus to publish the book, the Humani Corporis Fabrica Libri Septem, on the fabric of the human body, a groundbreaking work of human anatomy he dedicated to Charles V. Not the first book, and he just said that Galen had made a few mistakes, and he had a reason that he made mistakes. He wasn't saying Galen was jerky. It's not that everyone at the time believed in Galen. Well, everyone did believe in Galen. He worked out the nature of the mistake, how he made the mistake. Just makes me sick. Many believe it was illustrated by Titian's pupil, Jean-Stephan van Kalar. About the same time, he published another version of his great work, entitled De Human Corpus Fabrica Librorum Epitome, a bridge structure, more commonly known as epitome, with a stronger focus on illustrations than on text, so as to help readers, including medical students, to easily understand his findings. The actual text of Epitome was abridged from his work Fabricum. And the organisation of the two books was quite varied. He dedicated it to Philip II of Spain, son of the emperor. So this is how the Habsburgs got into Spain and got into Holland. Fabrica emphasised the priority of dissection and was to become to call the anatomical view of the body versus the theoretical, seeing the human internal functionings as a result of essential corporal structure filled with organs arranged in three-dimensional space. This book contains drawings of several organs on two leaves. This allows the creation of a three-dimensional diagram by cutting out the organs and pasting them on the flayed figures. This was stark contrast to many of the anatomical models previously, which had strong Gallic-Astoric elements, as well as elements of astrology. Although modern anatomical texts have been published by Monte and Berger, much of their work was clouded by a reference to Galen and Arabian doctrines. So he was just at that point where there's a lot of Galen out, and he was getting the idea of three-dimensional aspects. Besides the first good description of the sphenoid bone that showed the sternum consists of three portions and the sacrum of five or six, oh wow, it described accurately the vestibule, the interior of the temporal bone. He had not verified Einstein's observations on the valves and the hepatic veins, but also described the vena zoochus and discovered the canal which passes to the fetus between the umbilical vein and the vena cava. Since named the ductus venus, he described the ornamentum and the connections to the stomach, the spleen, the colon, gave the first correct views of the structure of the phallus, observed the small size of the classical appendix of man, whatever that means, first good account of medicinum and pleural, and the fullest description of the anatomy of the brain at the time. He did not understand the inferior recesses, and his account of nerves is confused by regarding the optic as the first pair, and third as the fifth, and the fifth as the seventh. Whatever that means, I don't understand. In his work, Vesalius also becomes the first person to describe the mechanical ventilation. This is largely an achievement that result of this being incorporated into the Australian New Zealand College of Anaesthetic College's coat of arms as a crest. Wow. Excerpts. When I undertake, this is him, dissection of the human pelvis, I pass a stout rope tied like a noose beneath the lower jaw and through the zoochus up to the top of the head. The lower of the noose I run through a pulley fixed to a beam of the room so that I may raise and lower the cadaver as it hangs around the dissection to my purpose. You must take care not to put the noose around the neck unless some of the muscles connected to the cuticle bone have been cut away. Wow. Far out. It's not a dissecting table. They dissect them. They don't dissect them down. They dissect them standing up. String them up. Oh. Other publications. In 1538, Vesalius wrote Epistola, Decum van Alex Dextri Cubic Illandor al Letris, a letter teaching that in cases of pain in the side, the axial vein in the right elbow to be cut, commonly known as a venesection letter, which demonstrated received venesection and revived venesection, a classical procedure in which blood was drawn near the site of an ailment. He sought to locate the precise site of venesection in pleurisy within the framework of classical method. The real significance of the book is an attempt to support his arguments by the location and continuity of the venous system from his observations rather than an appeal to earlier published works. With this novel approach, the problem of venesection But I suppose the then striking hypothesis that anatomical dissection might be used to test speculation. In 1546, 3 years after the Fabrica, he wrote his Epistola Russian Mondi Propani Radicalis Synthetic Doctri, commonly known as Epistle on the China Route. Essentially an appraisal of the popular but ineffective treatment for gout, syphilis, and stone. This work was especially important as it continued the polemic against Galenism and tried and replied to critics in the camp of his former professor Scholevis, now his obsessive detractor. So I just think you've got mental disease just floating around Europe like anything. In February 1561, Vesalius was given a copy of Gabriel Fallopio's Observations Atomic, friendly additions and corrections to Fabrica. Before the end of the year, Vesalius composed a cordial reply and a Gabriel Fallopio Observational Examen, generally referred to examen. In this work, he recognizes in Fallopio a true equal in the science of dissection. He has done so to create. Vesalius' reply to Fallopio was published on May 1564, a month after Vesalius' death on the Greek island of Zant, now called Zakynthos. Okay, continuing this, scientific findings. So Galen, what a fantastic person. He was not Galen, Vesalius, Latinized of some sort of Flemish name, but really someone who wanted to sort of survive attacks. You've got to remember, the Renaissance was a time where there was not such strong institutions and people were liable to attack. Attacking was just the nature of the beast, and finding a good, healthy lifestyle was a fantastic stuff. He eventually died in a shipwreck, which is a bit more less mysterious and things like that. A whole lot of stupid unsanctulated, over-the-top tales which sort of came out of the Renaissance, sort of like the Middle Ages, things, you know, this is the time of miracles and saints appearing, all this unusual stuff. But the major thing that he did find was that Galen, as good as he was, respected as he was, used animals, and animals were different from humans, and he just slowly pointed that out. And he was similar to Copernicus, a revisionist back to, he was trying to actually support some of the ideas of Galen. Okay, so we'll just go through and produce some books, but the books were just, you know, he was just at the time the best. And his books had less is more. There's less astrology, less philosophy. And Galen was forced to use philosophy because there wasn't science there to go across. So he's very much evolved as he's coming through. Okay, we're going to go through the scientific findings, actually quite a lot of them. The skeletal system. Vesalius believed the skeletal system to be the framework of the human body. It was in this opening chapter of the book De Fabrica, Vesalius made several of his strongest claims against Galen's theory and the writings which he had put, in his anatomy books. In his extensive study of the skull, Vesalius claimed that the mandible consisted of one bone, whereas Galen had thought it to be three separate bones. He actually described their vestibule in the interior of the temporal bone of the skull, whatever that means. I don't quite. Galen's observation of the ape, he had discovered there were a sternum consisting of seven parts, which he assumed to be true for humans. Versus discovered the human sternum consisted of only three parts. So this is why Gallen made mistakes. He wasn't dissecting humans. He also disproved the common belief that men had one rib fewer than women. As noted, the fibula and tibula bones of the leg were indeed larger than the humerus bone of the arm, unlike Gallen's original findings. So what is it? Oh, isn't that the most amazing thing? Isn't that amazing? The Bible said Eve is made from a rib of man, so man's got one less rib. Muscular system. Vercellus' most impressive contribution to the study of the muscular system may be the illustrations that accompany the text of Fabre, which could become known as the muscle man. He describes the source and position of each muscle in the body and provides information on their respective operation. Vascular and circulatory system. Vercellus' work on the vascular and circulatory system was his greatest contribution to modern medicine. In his dissection of the heart, Vercellus became convinced that Gallen's claim of a porous intervascular septum were false. That's because how could you possibly have arteries to the head and veins to the stomach? So you had to have a hole in the heart. In fact, the fact was previously described by Michael Streffus, a fellow of Vercellus, but never reached the public, for it was written down in the manuscript of Paris in 1546 and published a year later in the Crispani Restitio, a book regarded as heretical by the Inquisition. Only 3 copies survived, but these remained hidden for decades, the rest having been burnt shortly after publication. The second edition of Vercellus published that the septum was indeed waterproof, discovering and naming the mitral valve to explain blood flow. Vercellus believed the cardiac stall is synchronous with the arterial pulse. He not only verified incident finding the valves in the hepatic veins, but also described the Zoroaster vein and discovered the canal which passes from the fetus between the umbilical vein and vena cava. That is absolutely amazing stuff. The fetuses just blow my mind. Nervous system. Vercellus defined a nerve as the mode of transmitting sensation and motion, and thus refuted Scandurri's claim that ligaments and tendons were 3 types of nerve units. He believed the brain and the nervous system are the centre of the mind and emotion, in contrast to the common Aristotelian belief that the heart was the centre of the body. He correspondingly believed the nerves themselves do not originate from the heart, but from the brain, facts already experimented, proved by Hephaestus and Aristaeus in the classical era, but suppressed after the adoption of Aristotelism by the Catholic Church in the Middle Ages. So this is the big, big thing that, and this is the great view. What is it? St. Thomas Aquinas just loved him. Upon studying the optic nerve, Vercellus came to the conclusion that the nerves are not hollow. Abdominal organs. In De Fabrica, he corrected the earlier claim he made in Tablia about the right kidney being set at a higher than left. Vercellus claimed that the kidneys were not a filter device for urine to pass through, but rather the kidneys served to filter blood as well. The excretions of the kidney travelled through uterus to the bladder. He described the omen, the connection between the stomach and the spleen and the colon, gave the first correct view of the structure of the phallus, whatever that means. He also observed the small size of the calcium appendix of man and gave a good account of the medicine and the pleura. So I think that may be the appendix. Vercellus admitted that due to lack of pregnant cadavers, he was unable to come to a significant understanding of reproductive organs. However, he did find the uterus had been falsely identified as having 2 distinct sections. Heart. Through his work on muscles, Vesalius believed that the criteria for muscles was their voluntary motion. On this claim, he deduced the heart was not a true muscle due to the obvious involuntary nature of its motion. He identified 2 chambers and 2 atria, the right atrium. He considered a continuation of the inferior and superior vena cava, and the left atrium, which was considered a continuation of the pulmonary vein. He also addressed the controversial issue of the heart being at the centre of the soul. He wished to avoid drawing any conclusions due to the possible conflicts of contrary religious belief. Against Galen's theory and many beliefs, he also discovered there was no hole in the centrum of the heart. But there is in fetuses, a hole in the heart. Other achievements. Ferris disproved Galen's assertion that men have more teeth than women. Far out. Ferris introduced the notion of induction on the extraction of eczema through surgical means, whatever that means. Due to his impressive study of the human skull and variations of its features, he is said to have been responsible for the launch of the study of physical anthropology. Well, there you go. Whatever does that mean? His scientific things continue. Professor always encouraged his students to check their findings, even his own findings, so they could better understand the structure of the human body. In addition to his continual efforts to study anatomy, he also worked on medicinal recipes that came to such conclusion as conditions as treating syphilis with China root. Visit claimed that the medicine had three aspects, drug, diet, and the use of hands, mainly suggesting surgery. Knowledge of anatomy and physiology gained through dissection. Visit was a supporter of parallel dissections, in which the animal cadaver and human cadaver were dissected simultaneously in order to demonstrate the anatomical difference and thus correct Galenic errors. Isn't that classic? Isn't that classic? Because there was no information system, no way of doing it. You just cut one and then the other and say, oh, that is very different. Scientific and historical impact. The influence of Vesalius plates representing the partial dissection of the human figure posing in a landscape setting and apparently in anatomical plates prepared by Baroque painter Petra Alcortina, who executed the anatomical plates with figures, dramatic poses, most of them with architectural landscape. During the 20th century, the American artist Jacob Lawrence created his Vesalius suite based on the anatomical drawing of Andreas Vesalius. Quote, "The Fabrica received a mixed reception when it first appeared. Strict Galenists deplored its attack on their master, while other anatomists, particularly in Italy, praised it as an important contribution. The reaction was ultimately to carry the day. Vesalius was going up against the towering authority of tradition stretching back to the ancients, here specifically the work of Galen. With only his experience on his side, he knew what his eyes saw and his hands felt, and concluded that traditional belief was wrong. In his publication, we see that Vesalius did doing everything he can think of to bolster his authoritative image, publishing a huge monument to himself, and presenting a work using Galen's own flowchart, presenting himself as a personal physician to the emperor, and having himself depicted in a commanding position on the title page of the book, argumenting his words with illustrations after illustrations, and recommending experimental road to all his students far and wide. His guarantee, quote, "If you doubt what I say and show here, or you own anatomy, do your own anatomy, see for yourself." Simultaneously, Vesalius' work was part of one of the earliest known public health programs. The Council of Doges in Venice responded to the bubonic plague in mid-14th century by directing the University of Padua Medical School to devote itself to discovering the causes of plague, how it spreads, how it develops in the individual, and if possible, how the victims might be cured. It was ultimately took 3 centuries to find the solution, but with Venice leading the way, the plague was eventually eliminated as a major killer across Europe. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you.
may you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.